Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run the SWB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Josh Meinerhardt joins me at TalkCast every Thursday night, starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. And search for call ID 17702. Or if you want to, you can join us over on Twitch. So just go to twitch.com/SFUOnCall and you can find us there. Obviously, if you want to, you can also download the Twitch app and find SFU on call and you can find it in there and you can follow and you can chat with us there. So by all means, there are many possibilities. Now, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, the podcast account is sfuoncall. Shocker! And of course, my personal account is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. There you'll see me mainly talking about tech podcasts, though every once in a while. Of course, I'm very proud of being an O's fan when lockouts ended. Yay! And, of course, a very strong Catholic. So if you don't like those, don't follow me. If any of those bother you, don't follow me. Of course, I also have the tertiary account, which is my Franz Games account for all those business-related things. You know, FedCom, Starfleet, SFB Online, also Starfleet World, anything that's happening, those things, you will see that, you know, whether it's a client update, a new tournament that's being run, a new game being getting going on Starfleet Warlord, you know, please, you know, follow them. It'd be great to see you. When it comes to, of course, the lovely TalkCast gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. No update on Mr. Petrick. Jean is still kind of recovering from her chemo. So, you know, things have been relatively quiet all around. So haven't heard anything, whether it's on the discussion board or on Facebook. So haven't heard anything. I'm sure there's stuff going on. I have not seen it. One thing I had not checked, did not check to see if they have any new miniatures out, because that's one thing I rely on Gene or Steve posting what the latest miniatures are, and I have not seen anything. And it's possible they already posted like a week ago, and I just completely, utterly missed it. But there is a reminder that to go to the StarfleetGames.com, and you will find lots of free material. Go to the index. There's plenty of resources that you can go to. Also, if you want to, you can go to www.federationcommander.com, and that's a whole alternate website which is available for you to look at Federation Commander, which is, you know, that's where the focus for it lies. Moving onward to the onward and forward to the online tournament, we have, of course, we have SFB Online Tournament, which that is the Sapphire Star 10 tournament, which has already started. I don't think there's anyone that's actually completed the game yet, but the tree has been posted. So if you want to keep an eye on the tree and people reporting things, so at the very least you can see who's winning, who's losing. Also, I would definitely, if you want to keep an eye on things, go to the discussion board, because there is a Sapphire Star 10 tournament topic thread. And a lot of times people will post the games that they're playing in against, you know, them and their opponent, and when they're going to play. So if you want to proactively find out when they're going to play their games, that's a good place to go. Now, they're not always pre-announced. Obviously, you know, sometimes people don't do that because they prefer not to have a crowd to gather. But, you know, to me, it's always, if you can, please do, because I'm sure you want to encourage people to play more SFB and possibly watch a quite an exciting game. And when it comes to the FedCom library, no progress there. And of course, we just started a new Die Hard game. And if you want to get involved in that game, this is the last week. After this week is completed, this will be the third week in a that we've put in turns. After that, I lock it down. No, there'll be no new entry. So if you want to play in that Die Hard game, now this is not for beginners. So if you've never played Starfleet Warlord before, this is not the game you want to jump in on. But if you're a beginner and you're just learning, sign up for free. I'm more than happy to run a free game for you, no cost, so that you can learn the game and play it. It's not as interactive as Starfleet Battles, but it's a fun game to get involved in. So with that is news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it's me, it's Barry, and we have some people in the chat room. We have Dave, and we have some other person, which I don't know, be Merle. But anyway, Barry, how you doing?
Fabulous. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Since I've been here.
Yeah, it's always been quite a few weeks. Got those early morning flights to get to thank that for.
Yeah. And the aftermath of that early morning flight was something quite pleasant. Face to face with Mr. William Shatner. Or at least my wife was. Wife and son were.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted, or my wife created a YouTube video. Did you see? I posted it. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
Oh. Do you want me to send it to you again? It was quite hysterical.
Yes. It's possible you sent it to me, and I deleted the text, or I'm not sure how you sent it to me. To be honest,
I believe I sent a text message.
Okay,
and there's a very interesting story there, and I think I actually at the last minute we had some last minute tickets.
Right.
That were available, and I offered them to you, and you were unable to take advantage of that opportunity.
Yep, that's true. Sad but true.
But Erica and Doug Howard Jr. Were able to take advantage of that, so they went
awesome.
Instead of you. So. We had six tickets total, two with front row VIP backstage passes to actually talk to Mr. Shatner, and my wife was able to get him a gift package, and the YouTube video is detailing that gift package. So the story of how those two tickets came to be was apparently there is a photographer who is Mr. Shatner's favorite photographer to use.
Mm-hmm.
He would certainly have the need for a photographer.
Oh, yeah.
And so this photographer recently acquired a puppy through us.
Oh, okay.
So... And Deb and this photographer, his name is, but you're going to like his name, Joe DiMaggio.
Oh, I definitely like the name.
Yes. And he is an amazing photographer and took probably the best picture ever taken of Mr. Shatner, which is detailed in the YouTube video. And, And this is Star Trek related, so I think it kind of has
Right, right.
Star
No,
Trek battles
understood.
tie in.
Understood.
Yeah. So, any case, so William Shatner sent two photographs to our house. Now, Joe sent 50 copies of this best picture he's ever taken of William Shatner to Mr. Shatner as his private, here's 50 signed and numbered, or numbered photos. Mr. Shatner took two of them and sent them to us signed, personalized.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. And of course, Deb posted those pictures of those photos on YouTube.
Cool.
So, yeah. So, but Deb was saying, what do you get as a gift for a man worth $1 billion?
Got me on that one. I have no clue.
Well, you ever watch a show called Boston Legal?
Yes. Actually, wasn't
Ah,
Shatner
man,
on
at the
Boston
end
Legal?
of every William Shatner, of course, he was Denny Crane.
Yeah, I thought I remember that correctly.
We're actually we've just started rewatching Boston Legal. Oh, it is hysterical. And the writing is just so witty and funny. It is probably one of the best comedies ever made. And yeah, William Shatner won several Emmys from that. Those were the only Emmys he's ever won were for his part in Boston Legal.
Wow.
And they were well deserved. Oh my God. And basically he was playing himself.
That makes it. I was just saying that makes it simple, but I don't think that it actually is simple for an actor to actually to be yourself on screen, you know?
Yeah, but oh my God, it is just, well, any case, so at the end of every single episode, James Spader and William Shatner are on a balcony, on like the 30th or 40th floor of a prestigious office building, their law office, smoking cigars and drinking very expensive whiskey. And that's the trademark scenes. And those scenes were just wonderful. We know Mr. Shatner is a big cigar aficionado. And it turns out there's an incredibly interesting cigar shop in York City. And so, and they make cigars that you can't, apparently the proprietor makes the claim that particular cigars, he makes them himself from particular custom blends, and it's like tobacco aged for 20 years,
Wow.
We're talking, you can't get, I mean, it's, you're gonna have to look hard and wide to, it's not like your $20 cigar.
Oh, understood. Understood.
Yeah. So we got two of those for Mr. Shatner.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you get for a man who's worth
Yeah. Oh, hey,
$1 billion?
that's the kind of thing you get for me, basically, for a man who needs nothing, wants nothing, it's something that he can appreciate, and especially in this case that you knew him well enough that you knew that he liked cigars, you know? And of course,
Yeah,
anyone who likes
and
cigars
the
like good cigars.
stories he told on stage, the life lessons, oh my God, they were just awesome. They were awesome. And his experience when he went into space on the Blue Origin rocket. And the way he described it, it was like, yes. Yes. And it was also heartening to know that apparently to get into the rocket capsule, you had to climb up the stairs to get to the top of the launch tower, 11 stories of stairs.
Wow.
So at the age of 90, this man was able to climb 11 stories, which, by the way, the base of the tower is at 4,000 foot elevation.
Wow.
And he was able to do that. Not once, but twice. The day before, they were testing to see whether he could do it, you know, kind of as a physical. And the second day, he did it to get into the capsule. So, and there was also much discussion about Ricardo, and I can't pronounce it. I cannot read it in my R's the way he does. But Ricardo Montalban.
Ah, Ricardo Montalban.
There was a screening of The Wrath of Khan with Ricardo Montalban before he came on stage. Because if you're going to have him there, you're not going to have him there on stage for 3 hours, nothing. It was just too much.
Right.
So they showed the movie, and then he's on stage for an hour. Yeah. But, so he had some things to say about Ricardo. He said was a wonderful man, and he had some wonderful stories to tell about Ricardo, and so there were some pictures of him in the YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that's all about. So you're wondering why is there so many pictures of Ricardo? It's because William Shatner spent 10 minutes talking about him after we saw The Wrath of Khan.
Understood.
What I didn't realize was that Ricardo, when they filmed the movie, he was barely able to walk.
Wow.
His legs were in horrible shape. He was almost in a wheelchair. But because of that, his upper body strength was just tremendous. And that's part of the reason why he was so ripped looking. And they dressed him accordingly to show that off.
Right. Oh, and I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Any case. Sorry to dominate the room. So, what was our topic of discussion tonight, other than that?
Something which I'm sure you will be interested in. Omega.
Oh, please tell. Yes. So, what's going on with Omega?
Well, nothing's going on with Omega, but I did have a quick little discussion with a person on YouTube, going back and forth, he posted, I posted a reply.
On YouTube? About,
yeah. You can do comments. So I replied to a comment that this person posted. And basically it was about Omega and how it was rushed.
They posted on YouTube, or they posted it somewhere else?
Posted on YouTube. Because remember, after I record this episode, I also I've got it on Twitch. I'm recording the video of me. Sometimes I share my screen, and I post that. I do some quick trimming of the beginning and the end, so you know I don't have all the hymns and halls before I actually start say hello, it's me. And cut out anything that's after I'm done, you know, and I might still record. Mm-hmm. And then I take that and I go post up on YouTube. So I got a YouTube channel, which I post this up on. So now, unfortunately, I don't have I don't think I've been up there long enough. And I said, I've not been up there long enough. And I don't have enough subscribers. I don't have a custom link yet. So it is what it is. And that's fine. You know, if someone wants to look for SFU on call, you will find my videos on YouTube. So if you want to see the links, you know, I've got for the past year and a half, that's about right. I've been recording the live show. I've been recording the video and posting it up on YouTube. Actually, originally I actually streamed it live to YouTube. Actually, it's been longer than a year and a half. And then Google decided to completely change the way they do YouTube live. And I went, okay, fine. Got OBS all up and running.
Hang on.
Okay. That's okay. But, you know, so I
yeah.
Yes. Did it go?
Well, somebody has been reading a book that I recommended me, and he said I got to this point, and I said, but I wasn't sure, you know, why they didn't try to capture anybody. He said, well, they didn't have the time or the manpower. Capture those ships. It's like, I'm not going to talk to you about the book anymore because you're always giving stuff away. And I'm like, give you any spoilers? the problem was, yeah, 20 galleons attacking 160 galleys under very heavy sea conditions, where the galleys were coasters, you know, coastal craft, and the galleons or deep water craft, and this was out in the middle of a freaking storm. So the galleons are very much favored, and they're armed with cannons, and the galleys are trying to do boarding actions, because that's what galleys do, you know, just come up with the other ship and hit them for a boarding action. And the galleons are trying to hit them with cannons, which they've got a lot of. The galleys can't mount very many cannons because they've got all those oars, so there's no place to mount the cannons. But the problem with the galley is that when you hit it with a cannonball and it rips through a whole bunch of people rowing oars, it kind of, the whole thing about those oars is timing is everything. They have to be well synchronized and coordinated.
Right.
And when you fire a cannon at the galley, those iron balls ripping through all those men takes that timing and throws it all out of whack. So the galleys basically lose way. So the galleys can't close to do the boarding action. So it was kind of like I'm saying, you know, did they capture it? He's like, I'm surprised they didn't capture anyone. It's like, they really didn't have that capability. Yeah, they could take those ships out, but they couldn't capture them. They didn't have first of all, they were outnumbered 8-1 or 6-1 actually. So they didn't have the manpower to capture all those ships, to put prize crews on them. And they only had so much daylight to work with. They just didn't have the time to work those ships over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, they really couldn't capture anybody. And if they had captured anybody, the ships they would have been capturing would have been useless to them.
Right.
So, yeah.
Because they had technology they didn't understand. You know, they weren't familiar with.
Oh, no. They understood the technology. They understood what a galley was all about. That was the obsolete technology. They had the new technology, the galleons.
Hmm.
They switched. In fact, the Tarisian Navy had secretly switched over from galleys to galleons because they had just been given several new technologies which allowed them to fire cannons much more rapidly than they had been able to previously. And they were also different ways of mounting cannons that where they actually put them on gun carriages that with trunnions so they could actually elevate them or depress them so they could actually aim the frickin' cannons.
Right.
Which prior to that point, you basically took the bronze gun tube and you mounted it, you strapped it to a large stick. If you really, you aimed the cannon by aiming the frickin' ship.
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, that's why nobody used cannons because they were, you know, they had a short range. You couldn't really aim them, and it took so long to reload them that you might have time for one shot before you closed for the boarding action. So it's kind of like, and you couldn't mount that many on a galley, so nobody would use a galleon because it really didn't work.
Right.
But with cannons that could be armed, that could be reloaded quickly, where you could put lots of them on a hang on a second. Where you could put lots of them on the ship, you know, that's why they switched over to galleons.
Mm-hmm.
And the changes that allowed them to reload them faster, they went from matchlocks, where they basically used a lit match to put it in the
right.
to flintlock. Fired.
Right.
And instead of the old way of doing it was you took ladles and poured the powder down the gun tube, and the new technique was put pre-measured amounts of powder in a bag and just shove the whole bag down the barrel.
Right.
And that improved the reload time by like 4 to 5 times. So, and they had also severely improved their gunpowder. They had used corn powder, which is a couple of extra steps of processing, but it made the gunpowder much more reliable, much safer, and more powerful and faster burning. So, because it burned faster, they could use a shorter gun tube. And a shorter gun tube with a muzzle loader is a lot quicker to reload, especially when you're talking about very heavy cannons firing, you know, 35-pound, 6-inch diameter iron balls. It's a crew-served weapon, and it's reload is, you know, mm-hmm. pretty labor-intensive.
Oh, interesting.
But if it's a shorter tube, it's a lot quicker to reload.
Understood. So how did we get down this path?
Oh, because a friend of mine has been reading a book where he's been doing the Audible book.
Hmm?
And so he comments on it. And I said, oh, well, you know, his comment was, you know, he said, oh, the battle has started and then finished. The dreadnought gave them a beat down. Not that they are pressing them at night. I'm surprised they are not capturing more ships, but perhaps they will in the next few pages. And I said, hard to capture. They didn't have the time or manpower to do that. Because I'm not going to talk to you anymore about the book. You keep giving away what is about to happen.
Understood. I assume he just texted you about this or something?
Yeah, he just texted
me. Okay.
Yeah, it's like after talk show's over, I'll call Gene because he's on the West Coast and it's 3 hours.
Understood. Understood. Okay, get back to the topic. That's about the Megas.
Omega.
Yes.
Yeah.
And more to the point, one thing that was brought up, of course, which is we both have not extensively talked about it, though we have mentioned it in the past. So, you know, I figured it's a good topic to bring back up again, which is the balance of the Omega weapons and more, you know, and of course the Empires themselves. Now,
yes,
and I think we both can agree that they got some pretty neat weapons. You know,
oh, there's some great ideas in there.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The
great
one
ideas in there.
I was just looking at, which was interesting. Which is the Caligar antimatter cloud generators, which is one of the few weapons in SFB that actually affect the whole hex.
Yeah,
does damage.
It's basically a T bomb with instantaneous detonation. It's a direct fire T bomb.
Yep. Oh yeah, I forgot about those. What's that one C4 Empire that has like the T-bomb, actually T-bomb checkers? I forget what they're called. I thought they're called T-bomb throwers or someone that. Which was okay. I have to relook at C4. Cuz there were some neat things like the sharks. Something sharks.
Right.
But anyway, and one thing I read about
these cloud generators are freaking awesome.
Yep. Of course,
they
one thing
are,
that,
however.
Yeah. Go.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to mention is that the one thing that I was reading the effect of it, and I went, "That's interesting," which is that the player who owns the ship gets to decide where the damage goes. So it's not like, okay.
No.
What's that?
The target ship. The
yes.
The target ship gets to pick where the damage goes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So if it's not like an developer torpedo where it takes equal damage around the ship. It's whatever the target decides. The player, you know, whose ship that is, that's the target, gets to say what shields it hit. And actually, they give an example in the rule book. It says, well, if there's a ship there with 5 down shields and only 1 up shield, all the damage can go to that 1 up shield.
Yes. Well, and to tell you the truth, if they didn't do that, in a lot of ways, that would be an overpowered weapon.
I agree, because it's one of the few weapons that actually damages everything in the hex. I think there's some other ones, but
what its main use is taking out that stack of fighters or drones.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the ones with no shields.
That's what it's. Yeah, that's what it's really good for. Fighters and drones.
Oh, agreed. Especially it's good. You get 2d6 to roll.
Yeah,
which is always nice thing.
Well, that's just to for hex. That's for
to hit.
Deciding if it hits the target hex.
Right.
Yeah, and once it hits the damage, it's kind of like a photon torpedo. It the damage is. I think it's what, double the amount of power you have in it.
I'm looking. I did not look at the damage. Hmm. Okay, yeah, any energy in the ACG may be expended for 1 to 4 points and later 6 points. This allows the color guard to tailor the damage load mm-hmm. to be delivered.
Yeah.
And then well, you,
yeah, you have a capacitor, and the capacitor could be 4 or 6 large, but you can determine how much of the capacitor you use for a shot.
Right.
But there is a 32 impulse delay between firings.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, that thing can fire every single frickin' turn.
Yep. Yep. And actually, one, another interesting about this
delay
is that...
But is the damage double the amount of energy, or is it just the amount of energy? I forget. I think it's double. It might be the same. It might be the energy. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't... Does not. Okay.
It has to say.
Yeah, I know it has to say. I'm trying to find where exactly it says how much damage. Because it says you can use how much energy, but it doesn't.
Under firing procedure, maybe.
That's why that's why I just read. I read everything that there, which says, you know.
I know it tells you how much damage it does. It's
no, it doesn't. Well, it doesn't say in the firing procedure.
It has to.
It just says how much energy is expended.
Okay.
There's priority. Arming procedure, right? It says the effect. I'm going to target affects every. Return on a bump. Okay.
Is there a damage table?
Nope. But
well, there is. There is a to hit table.
Right. With, and as I was going to want to get to this.
Hit,
with,
miss, and near.
Right. There's hit, there's yeah. near miss. So it's the yeah. amount of damage is reduced, but it still kind of hits and then miss. Complete miss.
No. Damage is not reduced. Damage is not reduced. Near miss doesn't reduce damage. It changes the hex that it hits.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so basically what happens is that if you get a near miss, you roll a die and walk the damage one hex in that direction. If you get a total miss, you roll a die, you walk the direction in that, you walk the damage in that direction, and you roll a second die and walk it again. So theoretically, a total miss could still hit the original hex.
Mm-hmm.
And a near miss could hit the firing ship. Not likely, but it is a possibility.
That's true. When it's close in.
Right. If you're firing from a range 1, I think you need to roll it like a 12 to miss to have a
no, 12 miss. Is the 12 is a near
yeah,
miss.
You can roll a 12. Yeah, 12 is a near miss at range 1. But that could actually hit your own ship.
Yep, exactly.
Not likely, 1 in 36 chance, but you could do it.
Yes, you could. That would be interesting.
Yeah. Other than range one or two.
Okay, for unshielded targets, the weapon.
Two, the hit probably.
Right, for unshielded targets, the antimatter cloud costs 2 points of damage for each point of energy in the weapon at the time it fired. And this shield, and the same amount of damage is caused Okay, it doesn't say explicitly. So my assumption at that point is that it's one for one. Because it says
unshielded, it says two for one, but it doesn't say for shielded.
Right. So if a unit shield, the same amount of damage is caused by same amount of damage is caused, but can be divided among the shields. If
so it does do the same amount of damage. Two for one. Yeah.
Right. Two for one. Okay. Jeez, that's I'm sorry. One. That is poorly worded. For love of Pete.
I know they did poorly word a lot of stuff, but yeah. So potentially you put 6 points of power in this thing, and you can do 12 points of damage to everything in a hex.
Yep. I totally agree there. Yeah, this is the reason why I wanted to bring this up as a topic is it's not, you know, Chris has some fascinating weapons as we just showed. Could we spend like 10 minutes just talking about this one weapon? But the one thing about
having said, and the other nice thing is that you don't have to use the whole capacitor.
Right. Agreed. It's like a particle cannon in that category where you can decide at the time of firing how much energy you got to put, you know, which is great.
Yeah. Now the firing delay for the next shot is 32 impulses, whether you use 1 or 6 points, it doesn't matter. It's still going to be 32 impulses firing delay.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine.
But yeah. It's a nice drone defense weapon. Because one of the tactics for the Koligar is, you launched a lot of drones against me. I'll grab a whole bunch of them in tractors, as many as I can, bunch them all up, and then plop that antimatter cloud generator on it and take them all out with one shot. And if I just use 2 points of power, which is not that much, and that automatically does 4 points of damage, and that one and that one survived. I just detected the large drones, which are now weakened. I can take them out with a P3.
True.
Now the downside of the cloud generator is, unlike an ESG, it is not a 360 weapon. It's a 180 degree weapon.
Did not know that it had a limited firing.
That is one of the downsides. Yeah, it has a firing arc. It's only 180 degrees.
Okay, I wanted to double check on that, which is the antimatter cloud can't affect plasma torpedoes.
It cannot. Only
right, energy based objects. It does not affect. So makes sense. Which makes total sense.
Right. Does not affect plasmas, but the Koligar phasers. Oh boy, are they effective against plasma torpedoes.
Understood.
And we've had that discussion a time or three.
Oh, agreed. And Lord knows we've had definitely a discussion about it, especially in the context of a tournament. And even, if we expand it actually out just a tiny bit, that is...
Say it.
Okay. Say it. Not to dance on Steve, preemptively on Steve Petrick's grave. That is currently, you know, ADB is not really.
What did you just say? Did you say Steve Petrick's
grave? Yeah, preemptively.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I didn't want to say that. Yeah. I did not want to say that.
Okay. Yeah.
But you said do it. It's like, okay, go do it then.
Say Steve Petrick's parade.
No, grave. Printed on Steve Petrick's grave.
You should have said parade. There you go.
Well, I don't think the parade would have made sense. But anyway, yes. And that is ADB, in this case, Steve Petrick, has always been against fixing the rules, fixing the Omega rules.
I know.
And that's one...
I've had that discussion with them.
Oh, yeah, I know you had that discussion with them. But if possibly... See, here's the thing. In my mind, when it comes to the Omega, and that is...
Yeah.
Okay, people can actually enjoy playing some of the Omega Empires, but splitting off Omega, because most part, Omega's not supposed to fight Alpha Octant ships. That's not what it's meant to happen. It's supposed to be its own separate little thing.
I get that. I get that. So let's say it's just Omega versus Omega.
Right.
I'm just saying that they have a whole bunch of different phaser types. And they're all supposed to be balanced within Omega.
Right.
I'm like, okay, let's say they are. Okay. But, okay, you know, maybe they should be balanced among each other.
Right. Oh, agreed.
They shouldn't have...
Agreed. And that's what I'm getting at.
They shouldn't have some that are... Yeah.
And that is... Because in theory... The rules can be fixed, and they won't affect things outside of the Omega, which Barry, I'm sure you can agree that Omega isn't widely popular.
That is correct.
There's been all this,
and part of it is because even if we go with, you know, okay, let's just limit it to Omega versus Omega. They're not balanced among each other.
Exactly. That's why I wanted to discuss it at all, which was because of there's certain things that can be done to the rules so that Omega, it's a little, even though we've got, what, five Omega modules, including the gunships?
Yeah.
Gunboats?
Right.
I'm not sure how sales...
But Module 5 is more just pseudo-fighters.
Right, the gunboats. PFs.
Yeah.
They're called gunboats in Omega. Mm-hmm. Well, Dave's mentioning that no one wants to learn rules for 12 phasers. And Dave says he does like Omega, though. Yeah, but... And the thing
rules
is,
for 12, well, there are a lot of different types of phasers. And yes, I understand that. Okay, some of them have different capabilities than others.
Right.
And I think that a lot of it could be adjusted by, I think the tables for the damage could be adjusted a little bit. Anti-proton phasers are ridiculously overpowered.
Mm-hmm.
The radiation phasers are also pretty powerful. Particle phasers can be powerful. And all the rest, basically. And the micro phasers, I think, are powerful.
Right.
And let's say, and I think I did charts where I said, where I compared all the phasers, and I put the standard alpha quadrant phasers in that list and said, okay, here they are in varying, and obviously some of them fall off faster. So at range zero, the most powerful ones are the anti-proton, and then the rad phasers, the antiprotons are the most powerful at range zero. And then the the opposite of those. Not the particle. Yeah, particle phasers are the ones that can do insane amount of damage at range zero. But based on the die rolls, the damage is all over the place. The antiprotons too, but the average damage, I think, of the antiprotons is freaking high. The wide-angle phasers just suck. and the quantum phasers just suck.
Understood. Now,
although the quantum phase, yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing about all the different phasers. Now, I'll agree, it's kind of nuts, though. At the same time, I don't think that big of a deal overall. But here's the one thing that, in my mind, you always have to keep in mind when it comes to phasers for each of the empires. Where does it stand in relation to heavy weapons? Are the phasers actually, they're heavy weapons in some cases, you know? I'm not 100% familiar with all of the empires and how all the empires and the weapons that they have on their ships, how they balance out overall when it comes to defensive and offensive capabilities. But
okay,
well, in my mind, that's the one keep in mind, because
the Mazarons.
Well,
let's look at them. The Mazarons, they have a tachyon gun, which is a dial-a-photon, basically. And in some ways, it's superior to a photon. And in some ways, it's inferior to a photon. But it's basically pretty close to a photon.
Right.
The Kolagars have their antimatter cannons, which I think is one of the best weapons in the game. It's got a lot of options and modes, and I think it's much more powerful than a disruptor. It is a single turn arming weapon, but it can be held.
Right.
And it can do more damage than a disruptor. And you can, there's a caseless mode where you can fire it quickly for ridiculously low amounts of power and doing ridiculously large amounts of damage. But in caseless mode, the only downside of that is if you use caseless mode, it does not damage shields at all.
Right, right.
So, but that's the antimatter cannon, which I love. Then you've got the Trogrins, which have two variants of their plasma technology. They have their plasma torpedoes, which are a little bit different than standard plasma torpedoes. And then they have a bolted version. And their plasma torpedoes, they don't have a, when it's in a torpedo, it doesn't have a bolt mode, and their bolts don't have a plasma, the torpedo mode. So, and they don't have there's a whole bunch of difference, but they have that.
Right.
Then you've got, those are the big ones. Probers, they have their heats, which is their plasma torpedoes, which have some interesting capabilities, but overall it's pretty freaking weak. And let's see. And you've got the spiders, or the arachnids. They have they have particle beams, which is like a faster firing, weaker version of a particle cannon. It only has an 8 impulse delay, but it's weaker than a particle cannon. It's weaker than a particle cannon, lower accuracy than a particle cannon, but it costs less power to fire, and it actually only has an 8 impulse delay. So it is commonly used that you fire that one twice a turn.
Mm-hmm.
And you can fire it overloaded twice a turn with an 8 impulse delay. And they also have a particle splitter torpedo, which that was kind of like they threw that in there. And but the particle beam, they also have a variant where you can put the particle beam on the end of a probe, which is a pretty cool option. And it's got a lot of a hard weapon to use because it can't. It basically, you arm it and then you have to fire it. You cannot hold it. And basically, what happens is the probe goes out to up to a range of 6, and then fires a particle beam from that point where it is. So if you have a target that's 5 hexes away, you launch the probe 6 hexes away, and it fires the beam at a shield that the firing ship can't see, but the probe went out past the ship to where the down shield is, and you can fire back at it. That's pretty cool.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. But it can't be fired overloaded, and it takes 2 turns to arm, and it's just difficult to use. Then you've got the warb, and the warb has a whole bunch of stuff. The warbs are just plain. they've got their version of an ESG is a little bit different. It's a subspace energy field.
Yes.
Where the subspace energy field basically says, okay, anything at range 1 or 0, it's kind of like an ESG, but it's not like an ESG because the subspace energy field affects everything at range 1 or range 0, and it's up for X number of impulses. The longer it's up, the longer the cooldown period. And I think the maximum amount of time you can keep it up is for 8 impulses. The amount of power it takes is based on how long it's up. But the subspace energy field only damages drones size 7 and size 6. There are size class 6 and 7. It does not damage ships at all. But if you had a stack of 20 drones, it would hit every single drone in the stack for the same amount of damage. And I think it's like 4 points of damage per impulse.
Yeah, but remember one thing, Barry, when it comes to drones, yeah. There are no, one, I'm not sure
there are no drones.
Right, and even with the current missile technology, there are no scatter packs in Omega.
Correct, other than the FRA. Which is a minor power, so we can disregard them, yes. The subspace energy field is effective against tachyon missiles.
Right.
And it is effective against shuttles.
Mm-hmm. Which means fighters.
And then fighters, yeah. Fighters, shuttles. Warb also have the anti-proton phasers. And if you look at the chart, the firing chart for the anti-proton phasers, they are killer kick-ass. Now, they also have subspace torpedoes. And the subspace torpedoes is the only direct fire weapon in the game that you fire it. It travels for a few impulses, depending on the range. And then it hits. And it's a direct fire weapon. So you roll for the hit at the moment it hits, not at the moment it's launched. And there's no way to intercept it between when it's fired and when it hits. I suppose if you were to cloak, that might affect things. But and the further away you are from it, the longer it takes to hit.
Right.
The subspace torpedo can, if you fire it at like range 4, its hit number is on 2d6, and I think its hit number is like 11 or something ridiculous like that. So if you fire it at range 4, it's very likely to hit, and you can do up to 20 points of damage. That's a nasty weapon.
What was that? What was the kind of missile again? Or torpedo?
It's called a subspace torpedo. And I think that's what it's called. It's Subspace
Rocket. Rocket. Subspace,
Subspace Rocket. Rocket. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, it's now for every impulse that it takes to hit the target, or rather, no, I think it's if the target, if you fire it at a target and that target moves out of its hex, it can still hit the target, but every time the target moves one hex between the moment of firing and the moment it hits, you add one to the die roll. So if you're moving rapidly, and if you move to a further range bracket, you could get asked if it's also one of these things, the more energy you put in it, the shorter the range. So if you move out, let's say you fire it and it's in range and they move to the next range bracket and it's out of range, that's one way of negating it. But it can also reduce the damage, and by moving out of range, it can reduce the chances of it hitting. But at close range, you know, range four or under, it's a nasty, nasty weapon. And the Warp also have anti-proton beams and anti-proton lances. The anti-proton beam is a marginal weapon. I think it's a two-turn arming weapon. But the anti-proton lance does no damage. But if you fire a beam and a lance at the same target on the same impulse, the beam does double damage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one lance can double the damage of up to three beams. So if you had a lance and three beams and you fired them all at the same impulse at the same target, all three beams would do double damage. And single damage, it's a mediocre weapon. Double damage, all of a sudden, it's a nasty weapon. Oh, then you've got the Hivers. The Hivers have their Stinger torpedoes, which is basically kind of like a disruptor, but they can be double overloaded. They're a little bit weaker than a disruptor, but not much weaker, but they can be double overloaded. Although the double overloading takes a lot of power. It's like two for a standard, four for an overload, and I think seven power for a double overload. But the double overload only does three times the standard damage, not four times the standard. So it's like not worth it usually. And then you've got the Alunda, who have biobolts, which biobolts are a combination heavy weapon and phaser.
Right, right.
So yeah, is that the one you were talking about earlier, where it could be a phaser or a heavy weapon?
No. Well, what I was talking about is, given the thing is, you really can't measure each type of phaser in Omega as, you know, as being equivalent, because you have to look at the entire ship itself for that empire and how they use those phasers.
Yes.
You know, it's and what the weapon systems use for offense and defense. I'm not going to say purely against their historical rivals, you know, because Lord knows when it comes to Omega, the historical rivals can change quite quickly, because, you know, they always seem to be constantly at war with somebody.
Everybody was at war with everybody else at some point. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Not quite that, but close enough.
But there's certainly a lot of variety of weapons.
Agreed. But I think, see, as I pointed out before, I think the critical thing here is that can Omega be fixed? And is is it, and more to the point, is it worth ADB's time and money to fix it? Because the ultimate question, of course, no, we're not debating that. Sorry, Earl was mentioning.
Well, to fix it, you need to put the fixes in. You need to play test it. And I think at one point there was there were people who were willing and able to do that, had the time to do that, and ADB's like, "No, we published the rules. That's it. We're done. Go away now."
Right.
I don't know that if ADB came back and said, "Okay, we're open for suggestions," I don't know that at this point in history, if people have that energy anymore.
Oh, understood.
To do that.
Oh, I, Barry, I totally understand that. But the thing is, the one thing I do not know how well the Omega product's selling. And the question ultimately is if it's not selling well,
then there's no point in putting money into it.
No, actually, that's when there is money.
Or is it not selling because it's broken? Or is
bingo.
It not selling because
that's going to be the ultimate question. And of course, with anything in the entire universe, giving something the same and expecting a different result is just total, it's definition of insanity. So, if it is possible to spend some amount of effort, obviously, which means obviously some money.
But
would it, would working on the empires and basically the weapons for those empires to improve them, to make them more well balanced as an overall octant, would that increase sales?
It might. I don't know.
Right. But
I would recommend, if you were going to make the effort to fix them, I would start with the Mazarons, because they're the Omega equivalent of the Federation.
Right.
Everything is based on them. So they have to be solid. And
so let's bring up the question then, Barry. Let's bring up the question. That brings up the question. Do you think there's anything that needs to be tweaked when it comes to the Mazarons, either the ships or the weapons?
Yes. Yes, I do. And the basic Mazaron cruiser is, it's an okay cruiser. It's decent. It would be pretty much equivalent, I think, to the Federation heavy cruiser. Not the tournament, but the classic heavy cruiser. And that's what it's designed for. Its weapons are the tachyon guns, which are basically a dial of photon, and that weapon I think is pretty solid. Unlike a photon, the damage drops as the range goes up, and unlike a photon, there's no fixed overload range. The more energy you put in, the shorter the range.
Right.
But it's much more accurate than a photon. So, and the hold cost is much higher than a photon. which
understood, but
yeah,
Barry,
that is
when it comes to dollars to donuts, is there anything that would need to be modified? Currently, what you're saying is that the Mazarin is they're pretty much good as they stand.
Well, the Tachyon gun is. Now, let's look at the other two weapon systems, the wide-angle phaser and the Tachyon missile. The wide-angle phaser is anemic at best.
Okay.
It's probably about 30% average, lower average damage than an alpha phaser.
Correct, and I don't care.
So,
the question is,
and you don't care.
Well, Barry, the question is, does it do its job when it comes to being in the omega octant? That's the question, because you and I were gone round and round about it in the past, which is.
Oh, I know. It does. Okay, let's look at who the primary opponents of the Mazarin are going to be. The races surrounding them are the Trobriand, the Prober, the Culligar, the Culligar, and the Arachnid. Those are going to be their primary opponents. The Prober and the Trobriand are plasma races.
Right.
The Prober have a weak plasma torpedo.
Yes, it does.
but it's highly phaser resistant. So they're not going to be using their phasers for plasma defense against the Prober. You just let those plasmas hit you or you run them out.
Right.
Because you can't phaser them down.
Mm-hmm.
Trobriand, the anemic phasers, you're not going to be putting your power as much into phasers as you are into heavy weapons, because the phasers just aren't as efficient at producing damage. So the ratio of damage output from your phasers versus your heavy weapons, you're more inclined to go for the heavy weapons.
Right.
The Tachyon missiles.
But remember, in that case, so it sounds like for the Mazarin, the wide phasers are mainly defensive. So the question always is...
Against what? Well, the Culligar doesn't have any is direct fire only.
Right.
The Prober are direct fire only. So they're not facing anyone with missiles. They're only facing races with plasma.
Right. Which brings back the question. Do they need more?
Who have fighters, but that's...
The question, again, comes down to being, okay, so the wide phasers are weak. Are the Mazarin, given their current weapons array, are they good? Do they need stronger phasers to begin with?
I think so.
Okay.
Also,
why?
Tachyon missiles.
Why do you think they need stronger phasers?
Okay. The Trobriands have very powerful phasers. The Culligar have very powerful phasers. The Prober have even worse phasers than the Mazarin. And the Arachnids have much more powerful phasers. So out of the four primary...
Barry, again, you're missing the point. The point is we're not trying to compare bananas and oranges here.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Because what's the function of the phasers depends upon the other context within the ships themselves. And
right.
And in the case of, let's say, and I'm talking completely off the cuff here because I don't know. When it comes to the Maseron versus the Caligar, maybe the Caligar needs a more powerful phaser so it can use more offensively because it doesn't have as strong heavy weapons, to make up for it. While the Maseron don't need... Let me just go with the idea first, and then you can reply.
If you took a Caligar heavy cruiser up against the Maseron heavy cruiser, the Caligar would wipe the Maseron every single time, and even if you took my tournament cruisers with... here's the other problem. The Mazarons have the Tachyon missiles. And the Tachyon missiles are an interesting thing. The cost, it's a variable. I mean, it's the custom, supposed to be the custom built, and they even say in the rule book, it's supposed to be the custom, most customizable missile you can have.
Right.
But the reality, there's actually more option modules for drones than there are for Tachyon missiles. But the cost of your option modules in BPV for the Maseron Tachyon missile is just insanely high. So for the most part, you can't afford to use anything except the standard Tachyon missiles. Now, a standard Tachyon missile, I think, does 8 points of damage if it hits. Takes, I think, 6 to 8 points of damage to destroy. I think it's speed 20 or something like that. Speed 16. That's it. Speed 16. Yeah, so speed 16. And then you don't have very many of them because your B racks only hold 5. Your A racks only hold 3 with no reloads, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Your racks have a firing rate of 1 missile every other turn. So the standard heavy cruiser has 2 racks, so it can fire 1 missile per turn. That missile, yeah, it's hard to take down. It takes 8 points of damage to kill it. But it only does 8 points if it hits, so you're going to look at that and say, just let it hit.
Understood.
And there's a myopic zone where there's a minimum firing range, I think 4, where it has to travel 4 impulses or 4 hexes before it arms itself.
Understood.
Reaches its target.
Right.
Target sector.
And
go ahead.
Remember one thing about the alphas to begin with. Remember that all the BPVs for alpha, like ships that have drone racks.
Yeah.
Those include. Yeah. What kind of drones do they include in them? By default. If you don't pay any extra
speed eight.
That's
speed
right.
Eight. I know, but it's a half a port BPV point to upgrade a drone to the speed 20.
Right, and that's for each drone.
Okay.
So if you have...
For each drone.
Right.
Now, Tachyon missile, again, you pay BPV for every module you add. Extra speed is a module.
Right.
Okay. So, if you want, instead of 16 speed, if you want, you have 8 points of damage. Let's say I want to put an explosive module in there, get it up to 12 points of damage to be the same as a regular drone. I think it's like 2 BPV per explosive module. Might be 1 BPV per explosive module. So you put a BPV explosive module in there. But all of a sudden, every time you put a Space 1 module in there, you drop the speed down.
Right.
So now it's speed 15. Okay. So you can very quickly get to the point where you can have this monster missile, but you're putting 8, 9, 10 BPV into a single frickin' missile. That's a lot of BPV.
True. I mean,
let's look at a Kuzini strike cruiser. 4 drone racks. And let's say you put medium speed drones in there. And let's say they're a rack. That's 16 drones of 8 BPV. 8 BPV to upgrade every single drone on the ship to medium speed. You can put 8 BPV into one single Tachyon missile. That's, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Understood.
Yeah, so I think that we need to look at that whole, the Tachyon missile system needs to be completely reworked. And I understand where Bruce Graw's thrust was with he wanted to create, and I understand why he did it. He said the problem, and he was looking at it from, he said with drones, the problem was you had gazillion objects on the board. And it was just a pain in the ass to have these drone stacks. And I'm sure he was dealing more with fleets than with tournament, because my focus has always been tournament. But, you know, he would be looking at, you know, well, I've got this ship has launched 4 drones or 5 drones, and this ship has done that, and you got a fleet of 10 ships, and now you're looking at 50 drones on the map, and it's like pain in the ass to keep track of them all. So he said, look, I want to make it so that, And the problem is that you got all those drones, and they're all going to get shot down because it's portable terrain. But it's a lot of stuff to keep track of, and it just bogs the game down. So
right.
He wanted to have, okay, drones that actually can hit, that are going to hit, but you don't have too many of them. So I can understand that thinking. But I think that was a great idea. He just didn't implement it right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to review the Tachyon missiles and how they're put together to make sure that I understand it fully myself.
Oh, yeah. It's like 10 pages of rules. On the different modules that are available, and okay.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Okay, well, it's starting to get a little late, so we're gonna wrap it up there. Barry, it's been a pleasure having you around for a change.
Yeah.
And you have a good night.
Yeah. next week I will be in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Central Time, so that should work out pretty well.
Cool. Nashville is Central Time?
It is.
Okay.
It's like just over the border of Central Time.
Right.
It's like 50 to 100 miles west of the line.
Understood. I'll have to go with you, because obviously you know more about where time zones are than I do.
Yeah, I've driven down 65 many a time from Cincinnati to Nashville. I can't tell you how many times I've made that trip. And it's southern Kentucky is where you cross the line.
Okay.
The line is not perfectly north-south.
Right. Oh, understood. Understood. It never is.
Yeah.
But but to
Right.
me.
And the line cuts, it doesn't cut on state borders.
Right.
In like Kentucky and Tennessee, the half the state is in eastern, half the state is in central.
Which must make things quite interesting, going back and forth between the two.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember talking to somebody in the Indiana who lived in a different time zone than they worked, and said that was kind of weird.
Yeah, you have to be in here 7 o'clock in the morning, which means you have to get up at 5 o'clock so you can leave by 6 o'clock their time, which is 5 o'clock your time. All kinds of crazy.
Well, I think more people tend to live east of where they work if they're gonna do that. This particular guy lived in Eastern, worked in Central.
Okay.
It wasn't too bad.
Right.
I'll let you go.
Okay. Well, have a good night.
Okay. Night. Bye.
So, had a nice little discussion there about Omega. Obviously, I need to do a little more research. I did some. I was looking at the Tekken missiles really quick, and I'm not quite sure Barry's got that 100% right. But I'm deferring to him because of he's probably read the rules a heck of a lot more than I have. I'm gonna read it a little more fully and to understand exactly when it comes to Tekken missiles, because I'm looking at this and it's going. Oh, what is it? That it says something here, which is the supposed strength can be improved by four in each various steps. Each 4 point increment costs half a point of BPV and 1 point of size. Explosive strength of 12 is available Y140. So that, and I'm not sure. And this, what does it say? It says the mass depends on the missiles, and I have to look up and see what the starting missile sizes are and things like that. So, anyhow, we'll wrap up. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.